that can distract you from achieving your goals and dreams? Is there a way to balance your work with other things you enjoy doing that will not make you feel like your time is being abused? At Born to Lead program, we help you to discover or rediscover your purpose or plan for life. We tell you how to find purpose in life. We are all born with a purpose. Join us on the journey to discover how other people have successfully achieved their dream or are on the path of doing so, and how you can do the same. This is Born to Lead. My name is Kizito, and I'm your host. Join us here now on 104.6 Planet FM. To the Born to Lead Show. Good afternoon, Auckland. Good afternoon, the nation's business capital. This is the Born to Lead program. My name is Kizito, and I'm your host. On On this note, I would like to welcome you all to the Bontoli Show on the World Health Day. Thank you all for joining us. It's a beautiful day. At Aotearoa, New Zealand. And for those of you joining us live on Facebook, thank you all for the Bontoli Show coming live on Facebook. So today, as I say, we have a very special guest in our midst today. And she's going to take us through very interesting topics. And to be honest with you, we couldn't get anyone else, anyone better than our guest for today's show. Famous Osibisa band, welcome home. So if you are listening to me right now, I would like to welcome you once again to the Bontoli Show, coming to you live from the studios of Planet FM 104.6. If you just join us, or if you just tune in, or if you're just watching on live on Facebook. So this is the Born to Lead program, and today is a World Health Day, 7th of April 2018, which with the slogan Health for All. So we couldn't get anyone better than a health practitioner, you know, to take us through some of the interesting issues that we are going through as a nation, Aotearoa, New Zealand. And she's well indeed knowledgeable when it comes to those aspects. So we're going to have a chat, and she will tell us more about what she thinks, what her takes is, you know, what her take is, and as well as in her experience and knowledge as a health practitioner, you know, what, you know, he thinks that she thinks that, you know, we can, how we can tackle some of these issues. So the person in the studio, she studied medicine at the University of Auckland, and she's currently ORL registrar. ORL, which stands for otolaryngology. I don't know if she's going to explain to us what that otolaryngology means, because it's a long word, and she's going to make it brief for us. So, and she's currently working as ORL registrar for both North Shore and Auckland Hospital. And yeah, so we are happy to have no one in the studio than Dr. Lesna Naki Skusta, right?
Skusta, yes. Yeah, you did last tackle all those long words. My name and as well as what I do. So hi, everyone. My name is Lucina. I'm happy to be joining you all today. This is a good live video of myself.
Yeah, so tell us, What does that ORL? I don't want to go for the long term. So what does that mean?
So I studied 6 years at med school at Auckland. Yeah. And then you graduate and you're a junior doctor, you're a health officer. And then you step up to be a registrar. And that's when you're deciding kind of what you want to specialize in.
Yeah.
So I'm really interested in otorhinolaryngology. That's the big word you were saying.
Wow.
So otor being...
It sounds so simple for you.
You say it enough times, it kind of just...
Yeah, you get used to it.
It's ear, nose, and throat, basically.
Yeah.
So otor was ear, rhino was nose, and laryngology is throat.
So that's the ENT.
Yes, yeah, so ENT, exactly. So the
ear, nose,
the same
and
thing.
Throat.
Ear,
right?
Nose, and throat, yeah. And we do surgery on the ear, nose, and throat. So it's all your tonsils, all your
sinus problems, things like that, and then much bigger.
So all the related structures on your head and neck?
Exactly. You know, it is head and neck surgery. So we do a lot of the big cancers and things like that as well. And then, like you said, I work at North Shore Hospital and I work at Auckland after hours because it's one DHB covers all of Auckland, essentially. Yeah.
So are you kind of, how is the profession? How are things going?
It's going well so far. So I'm a registrar now, so I'm not a baby doctor anymore.
Wow.
I've stepped up to...
That's good.
But I'm not the top yet still.
Okay.
And there's a long way to go. There's a big training process which you have to apply for. And that's another 6 years on top of the 6 years I've already done. So it kind of just never ends.
It's really intensive.
It's really long.
I mean, it gets intensive right from the beginning. I know medicine's about 5-6 years.
Yes, six years in New Zealand.
So you guys don't get out of the intensity of everything. It's like, you know, everything is intensive.
Exactly.
And is it because of the nature of the profession?
I think so. There's just so much to learn. And obviously you want your doctor to be well educated in the area. Yeah.
You're talking about my health.
Yeah, exactly. So I think, it's 6 years globally, essentially, give or take.
Yeah.
But I think it's necessary for it to be that long because there's so much to learn.
Yeah.
You have to make sure that you know it at a really good level.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So let's take you back to your study era. Did you have any experience overseas? And if you did...
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in medical school, everyone's... sort of encouraged to do some placement elsewhere, outside of Auckland, outside of perhaps New Zealand.
Yeah.
And I chose to go to Ghana.
Wow.
So I spent 6 weeks in Ghana working at a small hospital in Sawam Hospital over there.
You got the name right.
I did,
You know I'm originally from Ghana.
Oh, really? No way.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that is so funny. Where are you from?
I was waiting for you to kind of mention the name because I've talked to... yeah, I had a chat with Camille.
Yeah.
And then she told me about it. So
Camille is my mother, by the way.
I know. So I was waiting for you to, you know, kind of mention. And you did nail it in Sawam.
Did I?
Wow.
Yeah. So where are you from?
Yeah, I'm originally from Sawam, central region.
Oh, in the central region?
Yeah. But I stayed in the eastern region for quite a long time, Achimoda. Yeah, which I'm not sure if you know about that. But I'm originally from the coast.
Right.
Yeah,
it's beautiful. You're very lucky.
I know.
Beautiful.
Did you go to Kumasi?
I don't know. No, we didn't. I went to a lot of places and I won't. I nailed on the first one, so I won't kind of get it wrong.
Do you have any link in Kumasi?
No.
Camille told me a story. How true is that story?
What is the story?
That you're somehow linked to the king of Ashanti Kingdom.
She likes to think that we're royalty everywhere. So I don't know. I don't know if that you can take that. I don't know. To the king, no, I'm not sure.
Because she told me, because she's your mom, right?
Yeah.
Camille told me that, you know, one of our Ashanti kings went into exile in Trinidad and Tobago. Otunfo Prempeh the First.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, perhaps. I don't know.
Yeah, so that was in the 18th century.
Yeah.
And apparently, kings and, so everywhere they go, you know, they want to multiply, you know. So, and so she told me that you have kind of related to...
To the king.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll take that.
Yeah.
Sure.
But that's good. I mean, I mean, to be honest with you, I mean, he's the only king, or holy monarch that is sitting on a golden stool.
Oh.
Not even the Queen of England.
Really? On a gold?
On a golden stool. Pure golden stool.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, what do you call? So what you are, and let me tell you today, this is what they call Otikokoswanana, which literally means a descendant of the king who sits on a golden stool.
Okay. Is that me?
Yeah, that is you.
I'll take that. Do I get to sit on the golden stool?
Well, anytime you go to Ghana,
I should go to Ghana.
I'm sure they will. Yeah, the Ashanti Kingdom will be welcome. Yeah, welcome one of their own. Anyway, so tell us, how was your experience in Ghana, especially in Sawam Hospital?
It was just incredible. It was just so the people are first of all so welcoming.
Mm-hmm.
They called me a lot. Is it? I'm probably saying this wrong, but Obroni?
Yeah, Obroni. Yeah, which is a white person.
Which means white person, but I felt like I was one of them. So like, I was like, why am I?
Why are you calling me white? I'm not white. Excuse me, I'm not white.
Exactly. But I think it was just any kind of foreigner,
right?
Or Western somebody.
Yeah, coming from the West.
But no, so we worked at a small little hospital there. There was like three doctors, and then they have they're healthcare professionals, but they're not doctors. So they study, I think, 2 or 3 years, but they call themselves doctors because they have such a shortage over there and they need those people.
Wow.
So they have them work in the hospital.
That's the challenges we have in developing countries.
It is. It's such a... It's really... you make the best out of what you have.
Yeah,
really.
Of course.
So it's,
improvise almost everything.
Exactly. You have to provide your own blood for blood transfusions. You have to...
Wow.
Oh, you just have to save so much over there. And so the biggest problem, I guess, for me was coming from New Zealand.
Yeah.
They're really under-resourced. Mm-hmm. And I guess they have this thing where if it's not feasible to try and save the person, they kind of just leave them. So there's lots of road traffic accidents and young people coming in who are kind of on the brink. And New Zealand would try and resuscitate and do as much as we can to save them.
Yeah.
I think over there they're really realistic about how much resource they can put in. And if it's not going to be feasible to kind of prolong it, they just kind of let them go, which is, well, you do what you have to do, you know what I mean, to save for the benefit of everyone. So it was the biggest thing I think I had to deal with, but everyone is just, like I said, so hospitable and welcoming, and
it is ingrained in our culture to be hospitable, to be honest with you. so Ghanaians are welcoming, you know. That is our nature. But taking your professional side, with regards to your experience in Ghana, how was the food, the culture, beaches and all that?
Yes. So I can't even remember all the names of the places now, but I went to some incredible... I visited a slave...
Cape Coast Castle.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and what an experience is. You get to go underground in the sea, all the dungeons where they stayed and where they were loaded onto the docks, and that was unreal.
How was your experience with that kind of exposure?
Oh, you just don't even... you know, we're so kind of a little bit far removed, and we have a different take on what happened here in terms of colonization.
Yeah.
And I guess people weren't really taken from New Zealand, but over there they were.
Yeah.
And there's such a... I can't even... You get such like a tactile experience when you're in the dungeons, getting to feel like how they would have felt, cramped up and scared and being taken from their homes. And it was just crazy.
Mm.
But then the food was amazing. I ate a lot of rice and...
Do you remember any of the names?
I should. It was this kind of like spicy rice with beans dish. I can't
That's
remember.
That's watchy.
Yes, that was delicious.
With some spices, like
they had it in like bags, plastic bags.
Yeah,
I ate a lot of chicken.
Yeah, jollof.
But jollof is meat, isn't it? Is there meat in it?
It's also got it's more of like yellowish coloured rice.
Mm.
Because
I don't eat meat, but I ate a lot of. I might have had it without.
You can choose to prepare it with meat or without meat. Yeah, that's true.
So I ate a lot of that. Like I said, the people were so amazing. I remember this time I was kind of like lost. It was like midnight, and all these women helped me get a taxi, helped me get a bus. They like told their friends to look after me all the way back to Nsoam because I like was lost in town. And so I felt very safe, like in the middle of Africa, you know, in the middle of Ghana by myself. It was just, it was really surprising.
And you've traveled around quite a bit, right?
I have done lots of
traveling. Practice your medicine wherever you go, like South America,
In Ghana I did, in particular, but because, you know, here, working here is such a 24/7 job and I never get a break.
Yeah.
So when I do travel, it's kind of just for leisure, really.
Take a break.
To take a break and unwind. But it's not something that I have ruled out. I would love to do something overseas. And I've been looking at things like the medical ships or Doctors Without Borders. Mm-hmm. That would be something I'd be very interested in doing in the future, traveling and doing a bit of medicine overseas. So if anyone had any ideas, I'd love
that. Awesome. All right, I guess we'll talk more about that after the show. So today is a World Health Day.
Yes.
What do doctors and other health professionals do on a day like this?
I mean, it's not that we do anything different in our practice. I'm hoping that we practice good medicine 24/7.
Yeah.
But I think today is about raising awareness.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be the main thing, exposure to the issues that are affecting our communities today. And just making sure that that everyone's on board and everyone kind of is more involved in the issues that affect us. Or the issues that are that we're faced with that matter at the moment.
Okay. All right. And what is your take on the slogan for this year, which is health for all?
I mean, it's good that it's a slogan for this year. It should, it should be the slogan
For every day.
Year. Yeah, every day of every year.
Oh, typical of you, such a doctor.
But it's good that we've kind of, you know, refocused on that as a slogan for this year's World Health Day. But yes, definitely, I think health should be accessible to everybody, and it should be something that everyone is entitled to as a basic need all the time, every day, not only on World Health Day.
Awesome. All right. So today we're going to be talking about two main issues that we have in our society, especially that affect the young people of New Zealand. So let's look at the first one, obesity.
It is.
Excuse the pun. So I was looking at doing some background checks, and according to the Ministry of Health of New Zealand, the statistics for 2016-2017, one out of eight children are obese in New Zealand. When they say children, I mean 2 to 14. Is that right? You're correct. Yeah, which is about 12% of the kids in New Zealand are obese. 18% of Maori children are obese. 29% of Pacific Islander children are obese. The obesity rate has increased from 8 to 12% in the last decade.
I'm glad you have all these facts up your sleeve.
So just to rewind, I mean, for people, for my listeners and viewers to know what obesity is all about. What is obesity? I mean, how do you define obesity?
Okay, so we define obesity on a there's a bunch of factors, but we mainly look at this thing called the BMI, so it's your body mass index, and it just takes into account your height and weight, really. And for kids in particular, it's looking at things like growth charts, growth percentiles. In adults, it's looking at body fat percentages and other things that you can take, bone mass, other things that you can take into account as well. But basically, we look at BMI.
Yeah.
And a healthy BMI is 20 to 24.9, something like that. Oh, exactly that, sorry. And overweight is above 25, and obese is when you're above 30, essentially. And so you're right with all those statistics. I think New Zealand has the third highest
after USA obesity, and Mexico
rates in the OECD. So we've got a lot of people in that above 25 category, really. Which is worrying, and it's something that we should address again today on World Health Day.
That's right. And my interest is more about Pacific and Maori children, because if you it's staggering if you look at the statistics.
Yeah,
you know,
and it's unfortunate
when it comes to
because we're always disproportionately you know, represented, the Maori and Pacific, in a lot of health statistics. So unfortunately, you're right, we do have higher obesity rates amongst Maori and Pacific as well. And I think, I mean, it's such a big issue, and so many factors come into play. You know, and it's just socioeconomic status, and it's healthy eating, and it's inactivity, and it's all those things that I think tackle out ethnic minorities, I guess.
Okay. So I'm talking about adults and children. Let's probably focus more on the children, because these are people who grow up to become adults. So what are the short and long term health consequences for obese children and adults?
Short term, I think a lot of short term outcomes are around mental health, really. And I think it's a big one is self-esteem and children. And that plays into adult years as well, and long term. And then long term risk factors are things like that adults face, actually, that we're seeing more kids face that they never used to before, but things like cardiovascular disease, you know, all your heart issues. Things like early diabetes that we never used to see before, and actually we see quite often now. And it surprises me, even, because going through med school, it's very much a kind of age-related. These diseases are age-related in a way. And so I'm always surprised to see, like, a young child with these issues. In particular, what I see is a lot of obstructive sleep apnea. So that's weight-related problems with your health that affect sleeping.
OSA.
OSA, exactly. So in adults, it's OSA in kids, it's all sleep disordered breathing, so it's problems with your sleep. And I see kids who are tired during the day, who can't concentrate at school, who have problems with reading and writing just because they can't breathe as well because they're a little bit overweight and they're kind of, their larynx, I don't want to say a medical word, but, you know, their whole airway is collapses a little bit. And it just leads to such huge problems, you don't really think about it. So watch out for the snorers, the loud snorers, if you have any kids who really loudly snore, things like that at night. And in particular, this is just a little plug, but things to watch out for. Watch out for gap pauses in your child's breathing at night. That can be an indication that they have problems with their sleep disorder breathing. And then, come and see us, I guess.
Would you say obesity is epidemic?
I would. Yeah, for sure.
And why that?
Well, I think it's because it's affecting such a huge population of people now. And I think we haven't quite tackled it yet, and I think it's a really hard thing to tackle. Like I said, a lot of factors come into play, but I think it's definitely affecting a huge cohort of people, and not just minorities, everybody. I think that's something we need to address.
Awesome. What is the importance of nutrition and physical activity when it comes to healthy living?
The basic fundamentals of putting on weight is that your energy intake is more than your energy expenditure, right? So if you're eating, if you know what you're eating is more than what you're putting out, then you're going to retain fat, gain calories.
Yeah, exactly.
So what it is it's about making sure that the food you put into your body is food you need. It's not food in excess. And making sure that you're expending enough energy throughout the day that you're not holding on to it, essentially. So it's all about healthy eating and making sure you have a good diet and making sure that you have enough energy throughout the day to burn it adequately.
Yeah, okay. And I guess that is where it's important for us to exercise more and then probably watch out for some of the food that we take in, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, and we've always known that, you know what I mean? But I think it's just, there's such good food that's not good for us. Yeah, exactly. It's actually doing it. You know, you want to eat the burger at 10 o'clock at night after you've just kind of watched TV or whatever all day.
Yeah.
So it's like about changing all those mindsets and little things. Just making sure that at the end of the day, you put in less or equal to what you put out.
I mean, is this something conscious or unconscious when it comes to obesity? I mean, I don't just get up and say, oh, I'm going to put on weight. You get what I mean? So why do people get obese? I mean, especially in children where, you know, of course, I'll eat whatever I'm being given to eat and stuff like that.
You know, Kizito, it's such a hard one. Because there's so many things that come into play that, some of which we can control, some of which we can't. And what I think it comes down to is, one, education. So people need to know what foods are good for you, what's not good for you, and that's encouraging people to read, you know, packaging and make sure that they know how to read all the health statistics on it. So one is education, and one is knowing, like, what's good for you, what you need in terms of vitamins and minerals, what's going to be too much sugar for you, what's not. So one is education. The second one is access, which is a huge one. So it's like, can we afford to eat this? Can we afford to feed our families on this? But sometimes, and I understand, sometimes it's maybe cheaper to get a whole bag of fish and chips to feed your family than go out, drive to the grocery store, buy a whole bunch of groceries, to cook a healthy meal for a big family. And sometimes it's time as well, which comes under access. So like a busy solo mum of four, does she have time to, in between her jobs, go home, make a big meal? You know, all of those things. So it's not just, I agree, it's not just someone being like, oh, I'm going to choose to be obese today. Sometimes it's a much bigger thing. But just as long as you're educated and you have access, that gets the ball rolling.
So touching on the responsibility of guardians as well as our parents, I mean, how can we how can parents or guardians or foster parents, whatever it is, help children to make, you know, healthy food and activity choices? Because when it comes to kids, I mean, that's why we have parents.
All the time.
I mean, what is the role of parents as well as guardians when it comes to kids making healthy choices?
Yeah, I mean, it's all little lifestyle changes. Mm. And like we said before, it's not easy for everyone. Not everyone's in the same boat. But I think it's about encouraging smaller choices. So making sure that they have three meals a day, which have a veg and a protein, you know, basic things. Making sure that even things like how you get to and from school, how you get to and from your you know, hobbies. Do you take a car? Can you walk it?
Yeah.
Can you get a little bit active a few minutes a day? Mm. And just encouraging all those little lifestyle changes that perhaps can help towards the bigger picture, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So just as a parent, I mean, it's not easy and the onus is not entirely on them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's just where you can do what you can.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit of prep and a little bit of organization to perhaps at the beginning of the week sort out what you might have as meals for the rest of the week.
Yeah.
Making sure that your children, instead of playing PlayStation for the extra half an hour, maybe they go for a bike ride or a walk for that extra half an hour. And then making sure that they also are knowledgeable and what is good for them as well.
Okay.
In terms of food and nutrition.
Yeah. So all those little things help, right?
I think
because
they
sometimes
do.
We don't pay attention to some of these things as parents or guardians. Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, when it comes to obesity, I mean, what is the role of health professionals or doctors like you? What are some of the things that we need to check with you to make sure that, you know, we are living a good, healthy lifestyle and well-being?
I mean, it's a bit different for me perhaps because I work in a tertiary institute.
Yeah.
So by the time I see everybody, they're kind of at the end of the road, if that makes sense. I don't see them at the base. I don't see them in a preventative setting, much more like GPs do, general practitioners in the community. So for me, it's a little bit different because I see them at the end. But I think doctors, we can encourage and we can give advice. We can't change, you know, we can't force anybody to do anything.
Mm.
But I think we're always here as people who can monitor.
Yeah.
So if you need your blood pressure checked, if you need your blood sugars checked, if you need your height and weight checked, you know, we're here to do that. We're here to provide education at the baseline. That's what we can do. So that people know, you know, what's good for them, what's not. What are they leaning towards? Any risk factors that they may have. Advice and encouragement, really. And so that's, I think, our main role, education.
Education.
Yeah.
All right. All right, so ladies and gentlemen, with us in the studio is Dr. Leshner, who is an ORL registrar at the Auckland Hospital as well as the North Shore Hospital. So today we are talking to her about obesity, and we'll touch on a bit later about mental health. But for now, we are talking about obesity. So if you just join us, that is what we are discussing on the Born to Live Show today. Today being the World Health Day, I thought we should talk a little bit something more about our health. And that is why we've got Dr. Desna Lesnar on the show today. So tell us, Doctor, so how do we prevent and manage obesity in children and young people? I mean, the preventive measures. I know you see people at the end of the road, so but maybe you might have some knowledge when it comes to
preventive measures. There are a lot of government agencies at the moment that are set up going into our communities and doing a really kind of holistic approach to obesity, to the obesity title. And I think they're all really great to get involved in, and they address the things, all the things really, you know, social involvement, eating, activity. And it's just seeing what's available in your community, really. That's on a preventative scale. Mm. And like I said, it's about education, about access in the first instance. So I think that'll be a much bigger issue to tackle, access, which I think is more socioeconomic and nationwide. But all those little things, all those community groups. I don't have them all off the top of my head, but there's a lot out there.
A lot of them out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think the food industry has a role to play in this?
That's a big one, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, that's, I mean, that, I mean,
that's
your
such
take.
A controversial topic because some people are like, oh, they're the ones to blame. I mean, you know, they are a business. Mm. They are obviously selling what
they have
to
make profit.
Yeah, they're selling what they... But there's choice.
Yeah.
And so, you know, sure, you can have a guy selling an apple and a guy selling a burger, but it comes down to which one can you buy, which one can you afford to buy, which one do you, you know, which one is more palatable, all those things that is not only the food industry's, it's not all on them.
On them.
You know what I mean? So I think it's, everyone's at play, really. It's about making the healthier foods more affordable.
Yeah.
Maybe the more expensive foods, less affordable and less appealing and less easy.
Yeah. So, as we said, New Zealand as a whole is the third most obese nation in the world. Mm. About 30% of adults in this country are classified as obese. Mm. Does that surprise you?
I mean, does it surprise me? Do I think New Zealanders, do I think we're big people?
Yeah. I mean, if you look at it, U.S. is ranked the first.
Yeah.
With 38%. So 38% of the adults are in the obesity rate, you know. And Mexico second with 32% of adult obesity. And us third with, you know, 30%.
Mm. I mean, do you know what? It a teensy bit surprises me only because New Zealand is seen as this very, like, active, green country. Yeah, you know, we've got so much access to great... outdoor activity spots, and so why do we perhaps live a more sedentary lifestyle? I'm not sure that we do live a more sedentary lifestyle.
That's why I'm asking you. Do you sound surprised?
So I guess
people travel, you know, thousands of kilometers just to come down here and hike, do all sort of, you know,
and do
activities,
all our adventure things,
enjoy our adventure.
It's funny because maybe our that lifestyle is only for a minority group, right? So not all of New Zealanders are living an active lifestyle, even though we live in a beautiful country. You know, just like every other country, we have our lower socioeconomic groups, and you know, we have our people that don't have access to all of that, that can't just hike on a weekday or brunch on a, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
we have issues just like everyone else. So I guess it, in that respect, it doesn't surprise me.
So do you think the obesity has become normalized in our society?
I don't think it's become normalized. I very much think that although it's becoming more of an epidemic and more prevalent, I think that we are know it's an issue, and I think we are trying to do things to address it, but like, it'll just be it's a big issue to address, and it'll take a lot of time and a lot of multidisciplinary input, I guess. But I don't think we're normalizing it. No, I think we're definitely looking at ways to address it.
But if you look around, you know, we live in a land of plenty.
Yeah.
So do you think that it is an obesogenic environment that is kind of, you know, because kids can have what they have, they go to school, they grab, you know, pie. Do you live in an obesogenic environment where, because a land of plenty, you know, you can get whatever you want?
Mm. No, I actually think in a land of plenty, you probably would be a little bit more, this issue would be probably less prevalent. I'm saying that because I think if you had a choice between a delicious, healthy chicken salad, you know, if you could have that over it, you would choose that. Mm. But it's not accessible for everybody to have that, to live that kind of a healthy lifestyle, in inverted commas. And that's what I mean by it's not actually... Mm. Eating right, you know, exercising right isn't plentiful.
Yeah, so what is in plenty is probably the junk food and all that.
Yeah, exactly.
Would that be the correct way of putting it?
Yeah, exactly. If it was easy to eat healthy, I think everybody would do it. If it was easy to exercise all the time, I think everyone would do it, but it's hard.
Okay. So, lastly, there's a good scientific evidence that restrictions on junk food marketing to children, an excise tax on sugary drinks, and then also healthy food service policies in schools and children would help to curb obesity. What is your take on this?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think, you know, we talk about it all the time. Me and my colleagues at work about the sugary drink thing, fizzy drinks in particular. I mean, how easy it is to just kind of buy a cheap fizzy drink from the supermarket and it's equivalent as a bottle of water, which is so much more expensive.
Yeah.
And it has no nutritional value whatsoever, buying a fizzy drink. Actually just adds, you know, sugar. So do I think that we should tax those and make other things cheaper? For sure, 100%. And it's not about taxing things and leaving it. I think it's about then making other things way more affordable.
Mm.
So if you're going to tax sugary drinks, make our other things way cheaper, you know, way more accessible.
So don't pass it on to the consumer.
Yeah, exactly. Well, pass it on to the consumer in an inverse way, yeah, if you know what I mean. So make other
unattractive
things... Make healthy eating attractive, make unhealthy eating unattractive, like smoking. You know, what did we do for smoking? We taxed a lot out of it and made it just an unhealthy thing, and we've turned those smoking rates right around. Yeah. I think we can do the same for obesity in much a similar way. Make it much more attractive to eat healthy, make it unattractractive to do all the, in inverted commas, bad things.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, in the studio with us today for the Born to Lead show is Dr. Lesina, who is with us today. Yeah, and we are talking about some of the health issues in New Zealand, and we are touching on obesity, and we've learned a lot today when it comes to obesity, and some of the things that we could do, especially as guardians, as parents, or some of the things that you need to do, some of the things you need to watch out for, so that you don't get your children being obese. So thank you very much. So we are on a commercial break, just a music break, and when we come back, we're going to touch on other issues as well. So today is World Health Day on the Born to Lead show. So those of you who are watching on Facebook, just feel free to post any questions, because our listener is here to answer any questions that you've got. Just post your questions on my Facebook page, and I'll be more than happy to ask her, and I'm very sure that she will be willing to answer your questions as well. So thank you very much. So this is the Born to Lead show. So if you just tune in, coming to you live from the studios of Planet FM 104.6. Today is the World Health Day, and we are talking about some of the health issues in New Zealand. Thank you. If you are listening, this is the Born to Lead show, coming to you live from the studios of Planet FM 104.6. So we've got Pastor David Adilowo listening to us. Thank you, sir. Adumba Efa, all the way from Ghana. Thank you for tuning in. Kwejo Ofori and Yinam, thank you for tuning in as well. And Janice Walsh from Dunedin, thank you for tuning in. Much pleasure. This is the Bounty League program coming to you live from the studios of Planet FM. Today is World Health Day. And with us in the studio is Dr. Lesnar.
Yes, hello.
Nakit Schuster, right? I always crucify your last name. Sorry about that. Thank you for those who are listening. Akash Anthony, who's a pilot, and he's based in New Zealand, but you know, I think he's a pilot in Tongan, so yeah, he flies in and out. Yeah, thank you, Akash, for tuning in as well. So there's a question on the floor. Is it, how accurate is the BMI? And this is from Kwejo. Thank you for the question. How accurate is the BMI for measuring obesity in the context of, I think, bone mass and muscular people?
Exactly, yeah. It's not 100% accurate by any means. It's just it's kind of like a tentative or a baseline figure to compare, essentially. So it's a comparative result, that something we have that we can use as a public to compare overall weight, essentially, weight to height ratio. But it's not by any means the gold standard, and you definitely have to look at, he's absolutely right, all those things like body mass index, like muscle content, like fat content, to get an overall estimate of someone's overall, I guess, weight or height or body mass.
Okay, but at least it's
something we can use as a comparative result. It's not the be all and end all, certainly. And you know, we've been told before, obviously, yeah, Pacific Islanders have heavier bones.
That's right.
Accurate that is. And some populations store fat differently. Mm. Some people have higher muscle mass, and so, yeah, by no means is it a gold standard, sure.
Okay. Yeah, and so now let's talk about our second topic for today. Mm. Mental health, and especially when it comes to suicide issues. According to statistics, and this is from the New Zealand, Ministry of Health. So the number of people taking their lives in New Zealand is continuing to rise, which is very sad. And especially among young people. Mm. In 2016-17 statistics, 606 Kiwis committed suicide, which is up from 579 in the previous year and 564 the year before that. What do you think is the level of impact of suicide on our society? I mean, the devastating ripple effect on our family, on our families and friends.
Yeah, so suicide is another huge, huge topic, especially affecting New Zealand, because like you said before, so we have the highest rates of suicide in the OECD.
OECD.
Yeah. And so it has a huge, huge impact on New Zealand as a whole. I guess it's about tackling the reasons why, essentially, which is again like obesity, but very multifactorial and not something easily addressed, I guess.
Most of these people, as I said, who are taking their own lives, are young people.
Yeah. So 20 to 24 year olds.
Yeah.
Majority men. And again,
one out of three.
Yeah.
It's a male. Yes. Yeah.
And unfortunately, as we're, like I said before, they're always proportionately represented, but Māori. Māori males have the highest statistics in New Zealand. So
do you think, are we doing enough as a society to build confidence and resilience in young people?
Yeah. Is confidence and resilience the problem? Is what I'm asking you. What do you think? Because you're saying, are we doing enough to build confidence and resilience? Because that's the issue.
If you're resilient and you are confident and you have hope, I mean, suicidal thoughts?
That's a small part
of it. Like, seriously?
Sure. Yeah, but yes. I mean, sure, that's one aspect for your perception, your self-perception, I guess, and your self-esteem and things like that. Sure, it's all of those things, though. It's such a, there's so many little elements to why someone decides to do
to
that
take
at the end.
Life.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's very much a personal thing, but it's very much environmental as well. And we know, so we used to think it was about depression and mental health, but we know you've probably got the statistic there as well, because you've come well informed. But two out of three people that commit suicide, they've never been in touch with mental health services before. Mm. So it's obviously not something that just people who are, you know, tackle with depression do.
So you're saying they're ignorant of the help around them?
Not at all. Ignorance, no. Are they not aware of the help around them? Perhaps, but that's not my point. The point being, it can be anybody.
Yeah.
Not just people that are tackling with depression.
Help, yeah.
Yeah. Or have mental health issues that are committing suicide. Mm. So that's not what we're finding. It can just be anybody.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, I mean, we've all in one way or the other kind of had some mental, I mean, maybe some level of depression.
Sure.
You know, especially with pressure, you know, from society and stuff like that, which is really hard. And I understand where you're coming from. You know, it can be anybody. You know, you've got pastors, children committing suicide. You've got, you know, other people, dignified people in the society, children committing suicide. So it's like, it's not like they don't have the resources at their disposal.
Yeah.
I mean, a rich man's, you know, son or daughter committing suicide, you might be like, whoa, what is
they
going on
all,
here?
Yeah, but why? Yeah, but why?
So it could be anybody. Which brings me to my next question. From the medical perspective, how can we help young people overcome known risk factors, you know, factors like trauma and, you know, and stuff like that?
Yeah. I mean, I personally don't think we have enough resources out there yet to tackle suicide, the big issue of suicide. I think first we need to address why it's happening.
Yeah.
And who really knows why? There's lots of speculations. You know, New Zealand in particular, why do New Zealanders have a higher suicide rate? Is it our culture? Is it our, you know, tough man, don't want to talk about it kind of, you know, way of thinking? Is it self-esteem? Is it resilience? Is it confidence? Is it things like that that you said? Is it lack of resources? Is it... So I think first we need to address why. And then I think as healthcare professionals, what can we do? Support is a big one.
Yeah.
So support before people feel like that's their only way out. So it's just engaging youth and it's access as well, much like obesity. So it's making sure that they know that they have people to turn to that they can talk
That's
to.
That's right.
And it's perhaps more than, I mean, Youthline and agencies, things like that are great as a first step, but I think it's more about engaging people and especially like what they had with the advertising around depression and just knowing that it's something that you can talk about, that it's okay, that it's normal.
That's right.
Perhaps having something around suicide as well. So, and depression leads on to it, obviously, but for people who know that they can normalize their feelings, that there's people out there to talk to.
Yeah.
You know.
How do you prevent suicidal thoughts?
how do you prevent it?
I know that's an internal. I mean, from the medical perspective.
Thoughts is an internal process. I can't be like, I don't want you to ever have a suicidal thought from a doctor. I mean, it's about knowing that you're having thoughts like that.
Yeah.
And it's about knowing what to do about it and who you can talk to about it. And I don't think we can prevent people having suicidal thoughts, but I think we can have a safety net for when they do.
Okay. And what are some of the symptoms and, you know, warning signs that
someone's falling into?
We have to watch out. Yeah, that, you know, this person probably might be thinking about, you get what I mean? So, like, so that we can help or, you know, step in and
make. Yeah. So, like I said before, it can happen to anyone. So, 2 out of 3 people, it just, you know, they have had no, they've had no mental health services in touch with them in the past. But generally, I think things to look out for are things that would indicate that you're perhaps depressed or anxious.
Mm.
So withdrawal from your day-to-day functioning, withdrawal from people around you that you love, inactivity, you know, ongoing fatigue, lack of interest or enjoyment in things that you were interested in before. So these are all things for depression.
Yeah.
But I think they can be generally applied to people who are feeling a bit dysthymic or a little bit under the weather, that perhaps could be going down that road.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting, I read this thing where someone was talking about how they felt when they were suicidal and they didn't want to, you know, we have Youthline, which I, again, is brilliant, but they didn't want to pick up the phone and talk to someone. So it's not like if you're feeling depressed, you're going to go out and try and get in touch with someone. No, you have to, I think people around them have to recognize that perhaps they're not in a good way and approach them. Like, hey, you're feeling okay, I'm here for you if you need to talk about anything.
Yeah. You know, according to statistics, you know, there's no doubt that suicide is highest among the young Maori and the Pacifica Islander men.
Yeah.
You know, is it the hardening up mate culture kind of a thing that is contributing to
that's
this?
That's what I was talking about before.
Yeah.
I think some of it, you know, some of it definitely has to do with the New Zealand male mentality that, you know, we don't talk about. Don't talk about your emotions. And they may not feel that there's anything in between feeling sad and then just ending it.
Mm.
They may not know that there's someone that you can talk to. They may know but not want to do it as a, you know, as an image thing.
Mm.
And so I think it's about changing our image of how we talk about feelings.
Okay. So, and lastly, what are some of the natural and conventional treatments for, I mean, maybe suicide, I was going to say suicide, I thought, probably about prevention, depression, you know, depression. From the medical perspective, what are some of the things, you know?
Well, there's always social and there's always pharmaceutical.
Yeah.
So in the very basic level, talking to someone, feeling like you have support.
Yeah.
You know, it can be family members, it can be friends, it can be a healthcare professional, counsellors, your school counsellor, anyone that you feel you can trust.
Yeah.
It's about talking and feeling supported. And then obviously down the road, once you've tried all those kinds of things, then we have pharmaceutical agents that are available. But both.
Okay, awesome. So, what would be your last word? You know, well, today being the World Health Day, what is the last word that we can get from Dr. Lesner?
Well, I'd just like to say that obviously we've discussed a few big issues, but like Kazito mentioned before, health is something that's worldwide, and we're always available as healthcare professionals every day, not just today on World Health Day, to tackle any of these issues as well as anything else that you'd like to talk about. So feel free to go and see your GP, to see us in hospital anytime to talk about any of these issues.
Thank you, Dr. Lesner, for coming to the show.
You're welcome.
Alright, so that brings us to the end of today's show. If you just tune in, so this was the Born to Lead program, coming to you live from the studios of Planet FM, and today we had Dr. Lesner Nakits-Kuster, who joined us today. And for those of you who just listened, for the mental health, if you need any help, you can go to the Lifeline, 0800-543-354, or the Youth Line, 0800-376-663. You know, 24-hour counseling and provision of help as well. So thank you all for tuning in. Thank you, and God bless you. We'll see you next week. Thank you. Bye.
Yeah.